Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Lee Cohen and I'm joined by El Fakeador Laurie Blake.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, bud. How's it going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very well, man. How's your week been?
It's been interesting. Intriguing.
Yes.
Many things are happening. Plans falling into place.
Yes.
The slow, inevitable destruction of WrestleTalk.
Which is Spanish for improve.
Which is Spanish for improve.
Yes, because we're all trying to improve WrestleTalk.
We are.
With your screen stalker. How have you found it?
It's been good.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It's a different wheelhouse, but one I enjoy.
Excellent. Which is a tremendous, tremendous trailer.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
What a fantastic little bit of cinema. It's actually like a teaser that works. You know, like, because like now we live in a world in which you get teasers for trailers that tease something that might happen in a trailer. Then you get a trailer that just tells you everything that happens in the film. There's no teaser trailer for Avengers Endgame. There's just a trailer, and the trailer teases what will happen in the film. I don't know. It's just, yeah. It feels weird to not be told exactly what's going to happen.
It is all tease.
Yeah.
It is I wasn't expecting
this. If I can't sit there and read Wikipedia telling me exact plot of a film,
yeah.
I can't watch a film anymore.
Yeah, it was a really, I mean, go watch the video where we talk about it, because it's, absolutely wonderful. I'm so excited. I can't believe it's next month.
Yeah.
It's the end of next month.
Well, I love the fact that we've seen so little of it, and it is next month.
Yeah.
I'm glad that, like, post-Infinity War, Marvel's PR tactic has been one at a time, boys. Like, you know, it's been like, let's do Ant-Man and the Wasp, then we'll do Captain Marvel, and then we'll really ramp things up for Avengers Endgame. Like, they had to do an Avengers Endgame trailer before this, but, like, suddenly to drop this, what's this, like 4 days, 5 days later from, oh, like a week after
week
Captain
after Marvel.
Marvel
came out, yeah.
Yeah, so just to go like, oh yeah, and now this, be excited, because all the major like fanboys and girls for Marvel films will have rushed out to see Captain Marvel already. You've seen it, I've seen it. Like, so we're just on the come down of like, that was great. I might see that again. So you might go see that again, and then boom, be ready for next month, because this thing's coming.
And to your point as well, I mean, I feel like we're just doing the trailer reaction again, the second time round. But like, to your point of that. It, because we've seen so little and all we've had is teasers, it feels like it shouldn't be out next month. It feels like it should be out in November.
I love this, though. This is an interesting...
It's how I want trailers to be.
Well, it's an interesting tactic that, like, say, to switch it over to the video game style of things, like, it's something Nintendo's been employing, like, the last few years, is that they won't tease or talk about a game that's coming out in 2 years' time. All of Nintendo's marketing is focused on that year. So, like, we know now what's coming out on the Switch, generally speaking, for this year. But we don't even know what dates Luigi's Mansion 3 has got for the end of the year, Animal Crossing has got for the end of the year, like Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, all these things that have been announced. We just know they're coming this year. And we're working on a sort of like 3 month basis of like, this is coming out, this is coming out, this is coming out. And they all get more and more PR build.
Yeah.
But we're not really talking about beyond Metro Prime 4, which we know is coming. And that was, I think, just a saving grace, like a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Got to save this E3 presentation by announcing it. But other than that, there's nothing they're talking about that has a longer tail than December this year.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant because it just means that you don't spend 5 years being like, oh my God, when will Skyward Sword come out? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, you can just get excited, and excitement only lasts so long. Like, yeah. Hype is something that's so limited. So it's nice to be able to go like, well, I know that this is coming out this year and I can only get more excited, but I know definitely that by the end of this year, I'll be playing this thing
yeah.
or watching this thing next month.
Like compare Smash Brothers, like the announcement of Super Smash Brothers Ultimate compared to when it was announced to its release date, which was like months later. Mm. Like it wasn't like, there was a very short tail time between
yes.
the announcement trailer and its actual release in December. Mm-hmm. Compare that to Resident Evil 2, which came out in January. That game was announced like 4 years ago.
Yes.
And it was announced so long ago that most people just forgot about it.
Yeah, yeah.
There was even to the point where a lot of people were asking, is that game actually being made? Is it ever coming out?
They were lucky it looked so good, when they released it. Yeah. When they were like, here it is. And people were like, oh my God.
Oh, actually, this is great. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of the same with the Final Fantasy VII remake. Like, that was announced so long ago that I don't think anyone really seems...
To be fair, I forgot that was happening.
Yeah.
I've been so busy, like, but also, like, the focus of, like, it's coming out on Switch in a couple of months. Like,
the
original version of Final Fantasy VII. That is more exciting to me than seeing it remade in new, like, with new graphics. I'd much rather just be like, I could play it on a train.
Yeah,
like,
oh, absolutely.
I'm into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, well, let's have a quick Rusev hey. I say it's a quick one. It's quite a long one, but let's have a Rusev hey before we get into the review. This one comes in from Lee. He says, hi, Luke, Ollie, Fakador, and most certainly not Randy. Two Rusev hey's in one weekend. I live in Cleveland, Ohio, the home of the most important pay-per-view of the year, Fastlane. There were two signings, one for Kurt Angle and one for The Miz, a day apart from each other, and we went to both. Kurt Angle, who is my childhood hero, was on the Saturday at our local Walmart, and I was so pumped to be, it's written the number eight. I was so pumped to see him. Since it was in a Walmart, all the kids were running around the aisles playing and moving all the toys and generally being pretty annoying. By the time we got to see Kurt Angle, I was so tired and awestruck, I didn't even say a word to him when he signed my belt. But my loving girlfriend actually said, hi, how are you doing, to him for me. I was so embarrassed that I didn't want to look like a fool in front of him, but maybe I did. The second was with The Miz at a cricket wireless dealer. Excuse me. Sorry, I ate my lunch just before we came in. I feel like I've been very gassy in this whole show. This experience was so much better and a well-run event. We waited for 2 hours outside in the cold to meet The Miz. We had a signing of the super famous Miz, and he walked into the store to wait with his son, and there were plenty... The Miz has got a son, has he? Wait, with his son? I thought Miz only had Monroe Sky. I thought it was his first child.
Ooh, I don't know.
Oh, unless he means Mr. Miz, as in Miz Dad, walked in with his son. There you go. And there were plenty of Mr. Miz chants. There we go. He's talking about Miz Dad. That makes more sense. Sorry, that was my bad interpretation of your email. It was finally our turn when we met him, and he was, no pun intended, awesome. He shook my hand and signed my stuff. We had a quick chat about our local sports teams and took pictures. All in all, he was a great guy, and I was happy to meet him. This is also a Rest Talk Get Better you can save for another show, but I'll write it here. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do it now. I started listening to you guys over 2 years ago, and I was at a bit of a low point in my life where I didn't think I would ever find my soulmate. I didn't have too many hobbies, but I loved watching wrestling, and I fell out onto your review videos and then your podcast. I met my girlfriend Sarah through a friend a year ago, and we've been together ever since. I've since then got her hooked into wrestling so much, we watch all of your review videos and even listen to the podcast together sometimes. For my 30th birthday, she bought me tickets to Fastlane, and we're actually getting ready to leave right now. She's the love of my life, and when she hears us on the podcast, she may cry. Thank you for reading this from a longtime fan. And there is the photo of our friend Lee with his lovely girlfriend Sarah. That's him with The Miz. And there he is with Kurt Angle as well.
Kangle.
Oh, you two look very, very happy and are super, super cute together. And I like that your girlfriend is wearing a Total Divas t-shirt as well. Branding, mate. Very, very nice. Thank you so much for your email. Right, well, let's crack on into the show. And if you're interested for the outro portion of this podcast, although I'm going to put a spoiler warning now, we're going to be talking about Captain Marvel because we've both seen it now. And I want to talk to about someone. So I've chosen Laurie. That's who I'm talking about it with. Anyway, here's the show. We're talking about NXT. And in particular, that Johnny Gargano face turn. Here's the show. We're going to talk about the main event angle of this show, which also includes the main event match itself. And what a main event match it was.
Mm.
So this show is kind of built around the semi-finals for the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic.
Oh, yeah.
You had Mustache Mountain versus the Forgotten Sons. And in the main event, you had DIY versus Aleister Black and Ricochet.
Mm-hmm.
Very differing qualities in terms of there. I mean, Mustache Mountain, amazing.
Yes.
We'll come on to that. Anyway, but the key to this was kind of built around the main event angle itself, which is that Johnny Gargano went out with an ankle injury, or like a knee injury or something along those lines. So he's there. So Tommaso Ciampa is now in the ring on his own.
Yep.
And he gets Black Masked and he gets 630'd, and Ricochet and Black advance through to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And then Candice LeRae runs down. And
which is all she does on NXT nowadays. Her only job.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you ever wrestle these days? So she runs under the ring. She comes to check on Gargano. Ciampa gets out. Ciampa looks like he's genuinely concerned for his friend being injured.
He even leaves Goldie on the apron.
Yeah.
His most precious and prized possession.
Absolutely. And so he helps Gargano up and they kind of walk to the back. They walk up the ramp. Gargano's limping. Oh, so limping because he's so hurt. He's so hurt, in fact, he falls over.
Mm-hmm.
Falls over when he gets to the top of the ramp. And Ciampa's like, no, come on, man. We can do this. And he lifts him up.
Mm-hmm.
And then has this little look on his face, which is like, oh, it's coming.
Mm.
And he grabs him by the head. And he goes to throw him into the sign behind him. But Gargano stops him. Ha-ha! It was all a ruse.
You got worked, Ciampa.
You got worked, Ciampa. Gargano was never hurt.
Mm.
He was never hurt, and he looks at Ciampa expecting this to happen. This whole DIY reunion has been for Gargano has become the puppet master.
Yeah.
And he was the one that was playing Ciampa. What a wonderful twist in the tale.
Mm-hmm.
And he grabs Ciampa by there, and he throws him into the boards. Lovely poetic symmetry to how the original turn of DIY happened. And Gargano stands there, and he gives Ciampa a super kick to the face. The crowd are chanting, Johnny Wrestling, and Gargano and Candice are celebrating. And Johnny's just standing in front of the crowd going like, let me hear it. Johnny Wrestling is back. And I was like, this babyface turn rules.
Yes.
And I was saying to Wally just before we came in to record this, this angle was equal parts amazing and heartbreaking.
Yes.
Because we're not going to get to see the conclusion.
No, that's this. Yes.
Yeah.
And from, not going to go into the spoilers, but obviously they have a workaround. They figured one out, which is okay.
Yes. But yeah, yeah. It is, WWE announced, this is not a spoiler, that Ciampa is going in for surgery.
Yes.
So, and he's going to have to vacate the title. So that's not a spoiler for the tapings. No. That's already been out there. WWE have announced.
It's interesting
that
they chose not to do it in sort of a way, it seems like they've chosen not to do it in a way that suggests that it was Johnny that forced him. Because that's how I would have done it.
That's how I would have done it as well.
This beatdown forced, you know, Ciampa out now. Mm-hmm. And he's had to vacate the title. And then you can do whatever you're going to do with the sort of, the title's been vacated. We're going to have a match with someone in it.
Yeah.
To be the champion. That's, you could have got away with that. One thing I will say about this, though, could they not have left it another week? Like,
yeah.
Do you not feel like this could have been the final of the Dusty Classic? Like, rather than the Forgotten Sons?
Well, yeah,
like,
quite.
You know, that could have still been a very epic end. And it probably wouldn't have taken away from the win of Black and Ricochet to have had this come after the match. Because they could have won the match in great fashion, had the sort of like revelry of people going, wow, you're going to face the War Raiders for the tag team champions at TakeOver New York or whatever, if that's kind of what's going to happen. And then we could have had this turn of the Johnny turning face again. Like,
yeah, yeah,
we could have just done that, and it would have been, I feel like, instead we're going to have to sit through Forgotten Sons, Black Ricochet, and see if that's any good.
Well, yeah. I mean, good Lord, they're strapping the rocket to the Forgotten Sons, aren't they?
Well, yes, but Jackson Ryker is clearly the one in that group that feels like the big deal. So I don't know why they're doing it, the strapping the rocket to the lackeys.
It was, of all the teams in the tournament, they are the ones that have surprised me the most to make it to the finals.
Mm.
Like, above teams like Street Profits and Birch and Larkin, and even the European Union, I'm surprised are out before Forgotten Sons have made it to the final. Like, they would have been so far down my list of teams that I think would get to the final.
Do they know something we don't know? Has WWE management come in and just gone, these guys, these guys, these guys, these guys, these guys, we're having them post-WrestleMania?
Well,
and they've just had to go, okay,
Or is it just a case of they wanted to do it because, as Percy said last week, they were the only team in...
To have been trained by Dusty.
Exactly. So I wonder if it's for that purpose more than anything.
Maybe.
Maybe it's just a nice thing for them. Also, it kind of does elevate them as a team. Yes. Which they have been very much kind of bland on NXT since they debuted. So this is a way to kind of say, like, no, we are pushing these as a big deal. So off the back of... if they don't win the tournaments... You know, they've got somewhere to go after that as well. Still feel like they're in that sort of main event slot of the tag team division.
I think the problem is, though, it's created a lopsided structure with this now where I'm only half as interested in the tournament in general as I would have been. You know, coming into last night's episode, I was very much of the opinion I like Moustache Mountain, but I'm not really bothered about seeing them face the Forgotten Sons. I'm very interested in this final match. And then now the final is going to be Aleister Black and Ricochet versus Forgotten Sons. And I'm sort of half as interested in that as I would have been.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that in a bit, I suppose. We got off topic of our original debate about Johnny... Not debate, but our original topic of Gargano turning babyface. And there was a moment during this match, which was DIY versus Black and Ricochet, where I just suddenly made the note, this is the last time we're going to see Ciampa wrestle for a while.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And there's that... All of a sudden, it just hit you. I've been like, sorry, I sound like I'm croaking up, but I've just eaten something. I've got some food stuck at the back of my throat.
He's really sad about
Ciampa.
I'm
so choked up about Ciampa. I actually genuinely am. And it was like, there was almost that moment of what a great 2018 he had. And like coming back from his injury, putting himself as the biggest heel in NXT, not just in NXT, but in arguably all of wrestling, winning the NXT championship and having this incredible series of matches with not just Gargano, but the match he had with Dream as well, the matches he's had on TV with Aleister Black. And you just think, man, this was so close to being perfect.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we're not going to get to see its natural conclusion. And that really does suck.
Yes. I feel like they're smart enough, though, that the solution... will hopefully be amazing when it does come round. When you know they managed to make the most of his last unfortunately timed injury, and actually it was almost better for it that he returned injured to cacophonous boos.
Yeah,
and couldn't actually wrestle because it just delayed the gratification of Johnny ever beating down Ciampa, because Johnny was a nice guy. He couldn't touch injured Ciampa, but Ciampa could turn up every week and taunt anyone he liked. Like that was, you know, you don't kick a man when he's down if you're kind of a noble person. So it kind of works in this scenario. You know, as long as his surgery goes well, he can return without having to wrestle. And he's so good on the mic and he's such a good presence that he can stir the pot without actually having to step in the ring.
Yeah, and Gargano's kind of position within NXT now is a bit unknown, because with the Ciampa injury, he hasn't been on the main roster since. You know, he was part of that foursome that were brought up out of the blue because they needed to change things up.
Yep.
But he's not been featured since Ciampa went out with the injury. So there's question now as to whether Gargano is going to go up to the main roster, or if he's going to stay in NXT for a little bit longer, maybe see what happens with the Ciampa recovery and whether or not we can get a storyline finished there, or whether we just bring Gargano up and then, should we do it, we'll just finish up the storyline on the main roster instead.
It must be such a difficult situation to be in, though, as well, to just go, well, like, what do we do here? Because they kind of, you must feel like, one, you've written it, you want to finish it. Two, you feel like you probably owe it to the Full Sail crowd for that to finish for them, you know, either at TakeOver or there.
Yeah.
However, you know that actually just finishing it on the main roster is a way to create two stars.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yeah, like, excellent.
Johnny goes up, has a bit of immediate success, wins a title. During that celebration... Ciampa makes his return.
Yeah.
Nails Johnny.
And inserts him straight into a storyline, into a feud. And that's kind of what we've been looking for with some of these main roster call-ups, rather than just being like, here are some lads.
Yeah.
Those lads now will do a wrestle.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
These are tag team.
But this match...
They have two separate entrances.
Yeah, quite. Anyway, this match, this DIY Ricochet Black match was... awesome. And that's when, like, the fact that Ciampa's not going to be resting for a while really struck home with me, because I'm like, he's so good. And he was just working so beautifully with Black, and he was working beautifully with Ricochet, and all four of these guys were just clicking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just magic on screen. It was so nice.
Mm. And it was, put the other match to shame.
Oh, didn't it? Like, just. Yeah. This was proper main event worthy. The crowd were, I won't say the crowd were quiet, but the crowd were audibly quiet in terms of you could tell this was the end of a taping cycle.
Yes.
And they have been there for 5 hours. They've seen these guys already, mm-hmm. you know, multiple times over. They're just a bit tired. And I don't blame the NXT crowd for that whatsoever.
No, absolutely not. And I think also there's the, like, these tapings had happened after the call-ups, right?
So
the,
yes.
Yeah, so there's a degree to which people will be calling on the idea of some of this just because they're not sure people are sticking around long enough to ever see it through. So it's kind of, you know, it is difficult to get invested in something where you're not sure what's happening. And now we're in a state where we're even less sure what's happening.
Yeah. But I think credit to the four lads in that the crowd were quiet because they were tired, which again, I don't blame them for, but they were very loud for the angle that followed.
Oh, yeah.
And they got massively, massively into the story that these guys were telling, which I think is a real testament to how good this story has been. Mm-hmm. So I thought this was an absolutely incredible match, including the spot where Gargano gave, I believe it was Aleister Black, the Tower of London on the apron. Oh, mate, that sounded like it sucked.
That's not a nice move.
That's not a nice move.
It's not a nice move.
Oh, it's not indeed. It was, there was just some really, really good stuff in here. I love Black's hot tag and him running wild and... Yeah, just absolutely crazy stuff from
start
to end.
I love the double submission spot where Gargano gets his knee injured, like, or pretends that his knee is injured.
So, okay, so Gargano has Black in the Gargano Escape,
which
is a pun. It took me far too long to get to working out what the pun is of the title, of the name.
So he's got... Because it's naff.
I'm just like, oh no, his name's Gargano.
Yeah.
And he's in a submission. Gargano Escape. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh,
it was only when we were recording, I believe it was Wrestle Ramble Extra. We did NXT TakeOver Toronto as one of our Patreon-exclusive podcasts. And it's when I wrote it down, and I was like, oh, it's Gargano Escape.
Yeah.
Right, okay, I'm there now. Anyway, so he's got the Gargano Escape.
He's got him
on
in the Gargamesh.
The Gargamel Escape. He's got the Gargamel Escape in. And
Papa Smurf.
And Ricochet, Papa Smurf. Actually, not Champa with Papa Smurf, isn't he, with that beard. And anyway, so Ricochet
and
tries...
Ray Smurfette.
And then... Anyway,
Gone too far.
Ricochet tries to stop this submission, and Ciampa grabs him and gets in the armbar, the big sort of armbar spot, and they're doing the double submission, and the commentators are putting over, this is how DIY beat the Revival to win their first tag team titles. This is really, really great. And then all of a sudden, Ricochet like just powers up. He lifts Ciampa into a Death Valley driver, and then he DVDs the digital versatile style discs Ciampa into
absolutely Blu-rayed him there
and he Blu-rayed him into Gargano doing the submission move. It was, I mean, I know we've been like joking about it and sort of talking over the top of it, but it was such an inventive,
it was a cool spot,
so cool. And as you say, like a really good way to then kind of have Gargano go out and sell the
well,
ankle.
It was brilliant because I seeing the spot happen, I just went, whoa! And then afterwards, I was like, I just thought, because it was a bit ungraceful, but in the right way. You know what? It looked like that sort of like, this was difficult to do.
Yeah.
So it didn't quite go as planned, except it did.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, they've actually hurt themselves there. And then Johnny was like, called the ref over and was like, my knee. And then rolled out of the ring.
So
I was like,
great.
What? And then I was like, okay, that's a bit of storyline here. Yeah. This, you know, in my mind, I was like, this leads to them falling out or something. Like, Johnny's always the one ruining things for Ciampa.
Bloody
blah,
always,
blah, 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 blah.
Always Gargano.
Johnny Naff wrestling. but like, and then, yeah, for it to be a complete swerve like that, I was like, oh, that is brilliant. Because everyone was expecting Ciampa to turn, including Johnny, for the first time ever.
Yep. Johnny was
fool
playing
me once.
He was playing
shame
him
on
like
me.
A fiddle.
Sorry, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three more times. Still shame on me.
Candace did roll me about this.
I should listen to my wife more. Aha, I got you. I'm the puppet master now.
Well, listening to your wife is a lesson we should all learn. Ciampa went for the fairy tale ending after this.
This podcast is sponsored by Luke's wife.
She is wonderful. And like they had this really nice like exchange spot between Ciampa and Ricochet. And then eventually Black Mass and the 630, Black and Ricochet advanced to the finals. Black's celebration of getting to the finals as well. Like it really felt like it meant a lot to him. Mm-hmm. Not someone who's not a tag team wrestler.
Yeah.
Just felt like he was like, yes, get in. That was great. So I really appreciate the celebration. And then the big angle ended. I thought it was a cracking match.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely awesome.
Considering it feels a bit like, you know, I know Black and Ricochet have come together because they both have frustrations with, they both have frustrations with people in the
tournament.
In the tournament, but mostly with the Undisputed Era. It's interesting that, yeah, this match sort of feels like a nice wrap up for Black as well. To be I've got one over on both these guys. Ricochet also gets to have one over on Johnny Gargano after the match at the last takeover. Like, it's a nice kind of culmination of things.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's just sort of feels it's a tournament where they just go some tag teams from across NXT where not all the tag teams actually have storylines going on.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a really, really well, a beautifully wrestled match, and the post-match angle was absolutely awesome. But yeah, I mean, it sucks. It really sucks that we're not going to get the conclusion that we all wanted. The conclusion that not just we as wrestling fans wanted, but the conclusion that they wanted.
Yes.
So that kind of sucks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Patreon shout outs to do. Let me move my laptop across there so you can read them.
I can see them.
You can see them. So thank you so much, Robin Banks, Lee Roberts. Oh, you get called for that, mate.
Ryan be bad. Thank you very much.
Always bad. This is a tasty Tim Heidenberger. Yes.
Labored puns. Probably better than Kyle, Philip O'Reilly.
Big claim. Big claim. The tactical distraction, Anthony Ibanez.
Yes.
I think he's talking to you,
Damian Thompson.
Damian Thompson. Matthew, Theobald, this city on rock and roll.
You're and welcome. Iran Tabori. I'm getting into Luke's headspace here.
We need more vocal based so we can get demonetized. Astounding.
Astounding.
Crikey, what's wrong with me? Astounding Abdullah Alenzi. Yes.
Woo! The mountain, Matthew Dennis.
What a mountain of a man. He is taller than most mountains. The show kicked off with a recap of last week's first round of Dusty Classic action. And goddamn, what a great show that was.
That was
last week.
One of the finest hours of my life.
Man, it was so, so good. And we kicked off this week's episode with semi-final action between Mustache Mountain and Yes, the Forgotten Sons. Not a great match, this.
No.
I thought it was a bit boring.
They weren't gelling. I just
I thought Mustache Man, Tyler Bate in particular, like he was very, very good, as he usually is, being his big strong boy and his big spinny boy when he did the spiral tap off the top.
Oh, yeah.
But it was... I don't exactly have a lot of notes for it because it felt like watching it, there wasn't a lot of notes to take. Like, Forgotten Sons targeted Trent Seven's knee. They did a long submission spot with him. And then it was essentially Riker interfering.
Yes.
Like, Riker put Blake's foot on the ropes, I believe. Or is it Cutler? It was one of them during a pinfall because Mustache Man had the match won. And then there was a bit where Riker he nailed Bate on the outside.
As he got pushed off the top rope.
Exactly, yeah. And then that distracts Trent Seven, which allowed the Forgotten Sons to hit their finish and get the win. Their finish, by the way, I don't think has a name.
No.
Which, they've done it a fair number of times now. Give it a name, lads.
Yeah.
Like, it's about time we had a name.
They're workshopping names frantically at NXT. That just got pages and pages. They got walls covered in it. It's like Beautiful Mind. It's just like, what is this called?
The Forgotten Name currently. Like I keep having to write, they hit their finish.
Yeah. Like, reverse DDT stomp.
Stomp thing. Yeah. And they advance to the finals.
They want to call it Mudhole Stomping. That's why. And they're just like, we can't call it
that. Big way to put the team over. Not going to take that away from them. Big way. And it does... This feels like we're putting a lot of stock into this team. So I can imagine we're going to see a lot of the Forgotten Sons throughout 2019 in the tag team scene, which, you know, that's probably a good thing. We need to push more of these tag teams. I just, as I kind of sort of said in the opening of the show, I just think there are more teams that I would have put ahead of them.
Yeah, and I don't know whether it's just they haven't had the right opponents or they haven't had enough time in the ring or whatever it is. Like, last week's episode... They were far better than I've seen them before.
Yeah, they were great.
And this week's episode just felt like they were going backwards. But they were actually in there with people who were much better.
Like, yeah, totally. Like, Mustache Mountain are incredible. Mm. Like, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven are incredible wrestlers. Mm. They should, it felt like this match should have been better than it was. Mm. And it wasn't a terrible match. It was just a bit boring.
I think they psychologied themselves out of having a good match almost. They tried to do too much ring psychology of we're going to work Trent's injured knees and do all this kind of stuff where it's just like, you've just got the difference maker on the outside. Let's just do it simply. Jackson Riker gets involved.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be anything more than that. Just put on a pretty good showcase. Like, go balls to the wall for 5 minutes and then just let Riker interfere.
Yeah, it was a real shame because we said last week all four matches in the opening round were brilliant. Mm. Like, they were all either excellent or, in the case of the Forgotten Sons match, very good. And it's kind of a shame that this has been the worst match of the tournament and it's in the semi-final position. You kind of want to elevate. You want to kind of keep moving upwards in terms of match quality, which, you know, Black and Ricochet did with DIY.
Yeah, they could have done with a bit more chaff in the tournament in the first round, really. And then we could have weeded them out and just gone into two really great matches this week.
Yeah.
But they unfortunately stacked it last week, so we just lost a lot of people who were amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all it's babyface teams as well, because it's Larkin and Birch, it's Street Profits. The only heel team would have been European Union. Which I would have absolutely loved to have seen.
They're not heels, they're just European. That's just the way European guys are.
That just makes
are.
Them bad. Ask Rusev.
Ask Brexit.
Oh, man. I don't know if you heard or thought about this, but I saw someone tweet that said, Brexit is the new Fyre Festival. Which really made me laugh. Anyway, backstage, Matt Riddle, Michelangelo, is backstage with Kathy Kelly. And kind of repeated what he said last week with Velveteen Dream, that he just wanted to get a closer look at the...
See if it comes in bro size.
The North America. Oh, God, Matt Riddle's lovely. What a wonderful man. And yeah, just wanted to...
He had some pizza backwards. And off he went.
He just wanted to get a closer look at the title. And then Adam Cole walks up and he doesn't understand why Matt Riddle thinks he deserves a title shot. Mm-hmm. And Matt Riddle challenges him to a match and then kind of they go their separate ways. Good little backstage segment. Really like Riddle. Love Adam Cole. Very happy with this.
Mm-hmm.
We then got a setup for a match at NXT TakeOver New York. It was a number one contendership match for the NXT Women's Championship between Ayup Shirai, Io Shirai versus Bianca Belair. So this has kind of been bubbling over for pretty much since after the last TakeOver events, because you had that six-woman tag where Io was the one who got the pin over Baszler. Noticeable by their absence, Duke and Shafir.
Yeah.
They weren't there last time Baszler was in the ring, and they weren't here again this week. I wonder if that's just because they would. The angle that preceded this, followed this rather, with Baszler laying everyone out, it was kind of probably seemed better, more beneficial for Baszler to do it on her own rather than having Duke and Shafir also beating them down as well.
Into Shafir.
Nice.
And what interference is.
Yeah, very nice. I like it. But Baszler was out for commentary here, and she was. She kind of had a couple of set lines. And then didn't have much else to add after that. So it was really cool. Like when she's like, yeah, Io Shirai's won things, but she's a nobody from Japan. I don't know why she thinks she deserves a title shot. So she said that. And then someone else asked her another question about Io. So she just repeated that again.
Mm.
I was like, I'd have liked to have seen her have more answers than just she's a nobody from Japan. And Bianca be like, well, I've already beaten her. I think you kind of needed a bit more from that.
It kind of works in the sense that she can't even bother to have more than one thought about them because they're so beneath her. But I don't think that's what actually happened. That wasn't the story they were telling with this.
No, exactly.
It's just that I've run out of things.
Things.
I wasn't expecting so many questions, Nigel.
There was a bit when she got up to like go and interfere in the match. Percy was like, "Where's she going?" And Nigel was like, "Oh, look, you've offended her now. She's walked away."
Nigel McGuinness, what a legend.
What an absolute legend. He loves that people are using the Tower of London spot because he's the only one who gets to call out, Tower of London! It's my finish and people are doing it! I'm going to call it by my name. This had some really good stuff in there. I like some of the action in this. There's a moment when they did like this roll through double stomp. So like Shirai rolled through a Bianca Belair move and instantly was up in the air for this double stomp. There was like no hesitation. There was no wasted movement in this.
She is unbelievable.
It's
athletic.
Crazy.
There was a bit early on where they just both started doing backflips.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, wee! I was like, this is amazing. Like this, it felt so different to a lot of the women's matches you see in WWE because the pacing of it was just like, where they're transitioning, say, Charlotte and Becky and Ronda into much more vicious style of wrestling. Sasha and Bayley are doing very sort of technical wrestling style, smart spots, that kind of thing. And here, we're just getting like, oh, look at the crazy flippy stuff that we can do.
Yeah.
Like, it feels so different to have like these fast paced, stringing together, really impressive feats of athleticism. Madness.
Yeah, I thought it was just really, really cool. And there was some good stuff in there. Io did a Frankensteiner. You had Belair using the hair and hitting the moonsault, but Belair got the knees up. And, oh, man, Belair's spear is absolutely wicked.
Mm.
So, so great. And then eventually, Baszler got up from the desk and she ran down and caused the DQ because she believes that everyone is beneath her. And she kind of proved that by laying everyone out.
Oh, this was cool, I thought.
Oh, so she looked
and the crowd hated it.
Oh,
perfectly.
Yeah, perfectly. Like, Baszler is such a threat. Like, and a believable threat as well. Like, she's just so brilliant in her character. And when she's beating people down, it looks so vicious. I'm 100% in love with Shayna Baszler.
She just does it with such a, like, blasé look on her face as well. So she just, like, she strolls down to the ring.
Yeah.
Drags Shirai out and dumps her on the floor. Yeah. Gets in the ring. Kira Fuda clutches Bianca Belair.
Yep.
Knocks her out. As Shirai comes back in, Kira Fuda clutch.
Yeah.
Knocks her out. Kairi Sane runs down and starts wailing on her. Kira Fuda clutch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm not having this, mate.
Yeah.
Get away from me.
It was nuts.
It was nuts.
She just like, every time she was just like, yep.
Yep.
Okay.
And then when Shirai gets back into the ring to help and Baszler's walked away, Baszler's like, no, I'm just going to do it again. Runs down, Kira Fuda clutch, going to take you out. Yeah.
It's like Solid Snake.
Solid Shayna. And yeah, she was really... What I loved about Kairi Sane's run-in, though, is Kairi Sane didn't just do a run-in. She stopped at the top of the ramp and did a telescope thing to like see, are you beating up my friend? I just love this character beat of just like, I don't think she's beating up my friend. Let me get my imaginary telescope. She is beating up my friend. Now I can run down to make the save. What a wonderful, adorable person she is.
Yeah, didn't help though.
Oh no, it didn't help.
Yeah, rubbish.
It was a rubbish save.
Terrible friend.
Yeah, she got absolutely beaten up and crucified. And then at the end of it, like, Baszler's walking out of the building and Kathy Kelly walks up to ask about her actions. And Baszler's like, there's not a single woman in there that deserves a shot at me. And it was very very good wordings. It's not a single woman who deserves a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kathy Kelly says, well, I've just had word from Mr. Regal. You're going to be defending your title in a fatal four-way at NXT TakeOver New York, rather. So it's going to be Baszler defending against Belair, Io Shirai, and Kairi Sane.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, this is good, but this is also good if we're going to do, you know, if Baszler's moving on after this. This is a great way for her to lose the belt, but not lose any mystique or magic and still remain a very credible threat going
on. Yeah, totally.
Because, like, she doesn't have to get pinned here.
Yeah.
You know, she can still, like, I mean, she's obviously been pinned by Sane before, but, like...
And Shirai.
Yeah, and Shirai. But it does, like, it doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. But also, to your point as well, that Baszler doesn't need the belt, so if she is going to be called up, because if they're losing Rousey as well, like, if Rousey is going to take this time off after WrestleMania, they kind of need that sort of MMA presence. You can bring Duke and Shafir with her. Like, it's just sort of her lackeys. And you've already got an inbuilt storyline then between Belair, Shirai, and Sane to feud over the title, like, for the next few months before you lead to your big summer show.
Yeah.
And your Money in the Bank show, and you've got that other show as well. So you kind of got an inbuilt storyline already there between those three.
Yes.
And then you could add another person into that to kind of, like, shake things up. Maybe Candice LeRae might do a wrestle. Maybe.
I mean, get your gear on, Candice, one of these days.
I won't go too far. She might do, though. So that's pretty much everything that was on the show. They also recapped the Lee Dijakovic action from a couple of weeks ago.
Their
rematch is next week, right?
Is it?
I think so.
I can't wait, and I hope it goes to a no contest again.
Oh, mate, yes.
I do not want this to end until TakeOver.
Yeah.
I want this match at TakeOver.
Me too.
I want it to start the show at TakeOver.
And it just continues going on. I just
want you to, like, yeah, that's it. It continues going on, and all you hear throughout the other matches is somewhere in the distance an echoing chop.
Verbering around the arena. Yeah, no, totally. Like, they start this match, and they, like, if you did it, you know, false count anywhere or whatever, and they just brawl all around the building. So after every match, like, cameras are catching up with, where are they now? Oh my God, they're in the lav. I'm just, like, kicking the crap
at him.
Power bombing him into toilets, into cisterns and whatnot. So anyway, I thought this was a great episode of NXT. Really, really enjoyed it. I wasn't so much into the opening match, but I very much enjoyed the women's segment in the middle. And I loved the DIY Black and Ricochet tag match and the angle that came after it.
Yeah.
So, I would say there was three quarters of a great show.
We are well on the road to take over New York.
Yep.
And my gosh.
Absolutely.
I could not be more excited for that show.
Really building up a very, very strong card, which I'm
all my for. WrestleMania.
Yes. Before we get into the review, I'm going to do a quick 80% fact. I kind of mentioned this one a little bit on the show with Ollie, but someone left it on our Patreon page about Fleetwood Mac. And the story is that 5% of the royalties from the album Rumours goes to their drug dealer.
I feel like that would be true.
Yeah. I
feel that would be true for Rumours, but 5% of it is not to the drug dealer. It's to a marriage counsellor. Like, it's...
yeah. Anyway, Lucy emailed in with some more details on this to say that here's some more background on this potential fact. The Enemy did a piece celebrating a particular anniversary of the album, and within it was a little quiz where there were three statements of rumours about the album. Two were true and one was false. I can remember that this one was definitely one of the statements, but I cannot remember if it was true or if it was false. So I guess it's actually a 66% fact, but it was most certainly the most interesting of the statements. Also, here at my university, there is a Fleetwood Mac tribute act poster in my halls of residence canteen, and on the first day I was told this fact to my flatmates as a kind of icebreaker for all the normal small talk. It then became a running joke throughout the year that I would find someone in the canteen queue that I've not told this fact to, then point to the poster and tell them. At the end of the year, my flat took the poster from the canteen and gave it to me. I still have it somewhere. So weirdly, this 80% fact has some sentimental value to me, and that's why I never want to find out if it's true or not. That is the most perfect 80% fact. I love that. You've read it somewhere. You can't remember if it's the true one, but you have said it to other people as if it...
And you refuse to find out.
It is a perfect...
Willful ignorance is the best.
Oh, I love it. An absolutely perfect 80% fact. Anyway, so, Captain Marvel. I went to go see it last night. We were talking about trailers in the intro portion of this podcast and how... The Endgame one's like a perfect tease to make you want to go see it. There was a trailer before I Captain Marvel for Dumbo.
Yeah.
And like, what a nothing trailer that is.
God, that film looks awful.
Like, for a film that's coming out this year.
It makes me cross how bad that film looks.
Like, there is nothing to that trailer. Like, I turned to my wife afterwards and was like, do you know what I love in films? No stakes.
Yeah.
I love it when films have zero stakes.
Yeah. What's the to be fair, I can't remember the original story of Dumbo. What happened? Elephant.
Elephant flies. Like,
why?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, the trailer just tells you, oh, you know Dumbo? It's a live action version.
Yes.
And it's just, it seems very uninspired. And it kind of, it's being sold on the fact that it's a Tim Burton.
It's basically the greatest showman, but everything's been shrunk down. Like, it's smaller elephant, smaller Hugh Jackman. Like, it's just...
Yeah, it really is being sold on the fact that A, it's a live action Dumbo, and B, it's a Tim Burton movie with Danny DeVito and Michael Keaton. And if there is no, like, Michael Keaton, Danny DeVito, Batman Returns references, I'm going to be mightily upset because, like, surely.
Well, because, and also DeVito's wearing a little suit and stuff, you know. Like,
your nose could be gushing with blood. See, anyway, Captain Marvel, what did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was a really good film. I said this in the Screen Stalker, like, trailer reaction, that it's difficult to go back to one-handers when the Marvel Cinematic Universe has grown to everyone is involved now. Like, it feels, and also I think it's a very weird time to go back to a solo endeavor when you feel like the stakes were raised in Infinity War. Stop. You have to watch these two films because you're a nerd. And then you're going to get the payoff a month later. So, like, at least we didn't have to wait a month. But it does feel kind of weird to go somewhere where none of that stuff matters necessarily. Like, Captain Marvel does a very good job, I think, of putting a lot of pieces in place for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because it's one of the few ones that, well, it's the only one really that occurs ahead of the timeline. Like, it's 1995 in the Captain Marvel film, and there's a lot of putting bits and bobs in place and explaining things that have happened if you're in the know. And just giving you that those little bits of setup that make the world seem rounder.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. I really like that. I think potentially just in a world in which we've kind of all become very au fait with how a superhero origin story goes, it's very weird to do one on a cosmic level in which the main character doesn't know who they are.
Yes.
And then to be like, you didn't know who, you've not seen her before. You didn't know who she, like, you've seen a tease at the end of Infinity War that suggests a logo. Then you see this thing happening. Then you're like, we don't know who she is. And she's fighting a war against people who also could be anyone. So you don't know who they are either.
Yeah.
And then it then, like, not to go too deep into the spoilers of it, but like, turns out.
I don't think we can go.
Oh, right, we'll go very deep into the spoilers. Yeah. They're not who we're told they are either.
Exactly.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Like, and the people that she's with are not who we're told. Like, this whole film is like, none of this is what you thought it was. And it just becomes a bit, I just feel like you don't get a very good grasp on a lot of it. Like, to me, I didn't feel very hooked in by, really enjoyed the film. It's a very fun watch, but I didn't feel like latched onto anyone as a character or anything like that, particularly.
Yeah, no, I think I'd agree with that. Me and my wife were talking about this as we were leaving the cinema. Like, her big, not complaint the Shadow of Evans, because she loved it. And I really enjoyed it as well. Like, I think this is a solid 3.5-star movie. I think, like, in real basic MCU terms, for me, it's better than Doctor Strange, but not as good as Iron Man. Like, in terms of being an origin movie. I kind of hold those up. Like, I think Iron Man is like one of the most perfect origin stories within a comic book movie. That and like Captain America: The First Avenger, I think are just perfectly done.
But again, that's the point with those two films, though. Iron Man, Tony Stark knows who he is, like, and he is in all scenes him.
Yeah.
This film is Carol Danvers. One, discovering that she is Carol Danvers. Two, discovering that she doesn't agree with everything she's told, despite the fact that she thinks she's a good soldier.
Yeah.
It's just, there's a bit too, there's like two, like, I like characters who, like, in superhero terms, maybe it's a little less three-dimensional, a little more like they're a comic book character, and they're just a bit more like, this is my through line, I am this person. And she has, there's a streak of that in there, and they do try and make a big point of, like, she always gets back up. and she's also like kind of anti-authoritarian to a degree.
Yeah.
Just because when she's been following the rules, people have tried to get her down. And mm-hmm. so she's actually like, well, no, F you. I'm going to do what I want to do. But yeah, I just think in terms of this, like, it was only towards the end of the film where she kind of forms into a fully formed character.
Yeah.
And now you're just sort of sitting there going, well, I've seen 10 minutes of you going, I've got phenomenal cosmic power. But then it's like, okay, but how does that factor into end? Like, what does that mean? Like,
yeah. Well, that was kind of like I very much agree with my wife when she made this point, is that we didn't get to see enough of the Carol Danvers before she goes off into space. Because the film is all about you discovering along with Carol Danvers about who she is and about her past and her relationship with Mar-Vell and Mar-Vell's relationship with the Skrulls and the Skrulls' relationship with the Kree. Like, it's all about discovering that along with the main character. So I kind of get that as a plot device. The problem is, though, you don't get to see Carol's struggles when she was on Earth as a human. And then when they have the reveal of, like, the she always gets back up.
I loved that montage.
Well, I like that montage as well. But my issue with it was that felt to me like that was never anything that was really set up throughout the film.
No.
You see it when they're scrubbing through her memories at the start.
Yeah.
But when you actually finally do that, always get back up. Like, that was 2 hours ago when we saw that memory.
Well, you consider that story beat is also the story beat that Steve Rogers had. Like, yeah. that's Steve Rogers' character. Like, he is awesome.
Do this all day.
He is also, I can do this all day. I will never give up. Like, and that through line, even though Captain America, the First Avenger, is not a particularly brilliant film.
Oh, I like it.
I don't think it's great. But like, that through line carries you all the way to the end. And you know, by the end of that film, who Steve Rogers is. And then Captain America 2.
We're in.
And then what an amazing film that is. Like, yeah. Winter Soldier is probably one of the best Marvel films, if not the best Marvel film ever done.
For me, it's King of MCU.
It's so good, but because he's such a rock-solid character, you can build a story around him. This story was like, here's the wool over your eyes, like, and then pulling out all the rugs. Like, it's just hundreds of masks falling to the floor. Like, who's who? What's happening? And I just think, also potentially just because it's a cosmic Marvel film, to have to explain what's a Kree, what's a Skrull, why are some of them blue? Why is she a human but she's got blue blood? What's wrong with Jude Law's eyes?
Yeah.
Like, there's all this stuff there's all these questions that I'm just watching it generally with, even though I know from the comics, but just looking at the film
from a distance,
you're just sitting there just going, well, what is all of this?
Yeah, a friend of mine, Emma, she's a comic book fan. Like, it's only a comic book movie fan. Like, we used to go to press screenings together way back in the day. And she had a very interesting point when she said, like for the first 10 minutes, first 10, 15 minutes, she didn't have a Scooby-Doo what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Because the film is quite bad at explaining who the Kree are and what the Skrulls are.
And then suddenly Ronan the Accuser turns up and you're like, what, he's very different to those ones. Like, these ones seem quite nice, and then he's quite, why are they?
Yeah. So those are kind of like the negatives that I would get out of the way of it. Shining positives, though. Bloody love Brie Larson.
She's great.
Oh, she's so good. So good. I'm really annoyed at the dogpiling that she's getting on from, like, the man crybabies who just didn't want a woman to succeed in Hollywood. But I just think she's terrific in the role. She's so likable.
How dare you, after 20 films, make me watch a woman to know what's happening.
Someone sent me a tweet saying, like, they'd seen the movie, and someone sent me a tweet saying, like, I thought all the women empowerment stuff was really shoved down your throat. We didn't really need Captain Marvel because there's already a lot of strong female characters in the franchise. Oh, and I'm like, what? They're outnumbered like 2-1 in terms
but
of.
But it's not,
like,
but I don't feel like it is. I don't feel like any of that film was about female empowerment.
I really don't think it was either.
It was about empowerment in general, and she happened to be a woman.
That's exactly it.
In the same, the scene in which she falls off the swing ropes I assume that's not the military name for them, whatever it is, in that obstacle course. She falls off the ropes, and all the guys stood behind her are like, ha 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 ha.
And you got that guy going, like, it's called a cockpit for a reason.
Oh, yeah. So that was a little bit like.
But it's one line.
Yeah, but that's like one line, and that's just you know.
It's just got, and that set up what her friend, I can't remember, was it Miriam or whatever her friend's character's name was, said, like, we were pilots in an era when we weren't allowed to be test pilots. Which, and that's why, which is true. Like, that's fact.
That's historical fact. It's not, but that doesn't make it women empowerment.
No,
that's
absolutely
just like,
not.
I don't know. It would be the same story if it was like, you know, it is the same story as Steve Rogers. Like, you were too weedy to be in the army, and therefore when you rise up and you prove everyone wrong, you're empowered.
And I've seen a lot of people say, like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just disappointed that she's now the one who's the most powerful person and she's the one who's going to be able to defeat Thanos. I'm like, I don't think you'd have had this problem if it was a dude. Like, if it was Thor that suddenly got all these powers, you probably wouldn't have been bothered.
But I think in the same way, like, I don't think she's going to be the one that defeats.
I don't think it is.
I think she's going to be part of the puzzle.
It's an OG Avengers movie.
Yeah, but it seems to be like she's obviously going to be a factor in it. But in the same way, like, you know, like, you can go, well, I'm annoyed that a black guy, Black Panther, turned up, and he's going to be the one to defeat Thanos. Turns out he wasn't. So it doesn't, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. It's a film that is playing its cards incredibly close to its chest.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I'm sure she's going, like, with her level of ability, she's going to be a big deal. But they made the same big deal out of Vision.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Age of Ultron, they were like, he's a world-ending machine.
He's
and then they were just like,
Ultron.
Yeah, and then they were like, dink.
Yeah.
Not for you, sir.
Exactly. And Thor's the one who's got the hammer. He's got Stormbreaker. Mm. That it's the Thanos killing kind.
Yeah.
But anyway, regardless of all that, I thought that Brie Larson was brilliant. I really enjoyed Samuel L. Jackson being very 90s Samuel L. Jackson as Nick
Fury.
Yeah,
he was cool.
And I loved their relationship that they had. I thought that was really cool. And I loved Ben Mendelsohn as the Skrull leader as well.
I loved the Skrulls. I think that was such a good swerve with them as well. Like, I know they've obviously done it before in the comics. I think there were some Nova comics a while ago where they did a similar Kree Skrull twist of, like,
yeah, because the Skrulls are traditionally baddies.
Yes, they are, yeah. But it's interesting to do that sort of, like, well, is there a reason behind it? And they really tunnel down on that in this film.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really good. It's nice to see
some really
that,
nice misdirect.
But it makes sense as well. Like, it's such a good beat for the Skrulls. It's like, why else would they be able to shapeshift?
Yeah.
Like, if they're not good, like, it's hiding. It's not a, like, that's not a confrontational power, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It's like a...
So I thought the cast were really good. I really enjoyed the direction. I would say that some of the action sequences were... I didn't get a lot of, like, thrill from the action sequences, apart from the one on the train, which I thought was really good.
That was cool.
I really liked the scene on the train. By the way, love that Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah.
Where he's reading the script for Mallrats.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin Smith, he's now canon within the MCU.
But then... To a degree, that also there's a knock-on effect of that, where it's like, well, Stan Lee is now canon in the MCU.
Yeah, right.
So is Marvel Comics canon in the MCU? What are they writing comics about in the MCU? Like,
it's a very good point.
Pictures of things I've seen out the window.
Yeah.
Like, it's a completely different world. It's not.
And on that topic as well, actually, I did get a bit misty-eyed during the opening bumper for Marvel Studios.
Oh, so nice.
Man. Oh, with all the pictures of Stan, and it was like, thank you. Oh, God. My wife went, it was like, oh, that's lovely. And I went, yes.
Yes, it's fine. It's okay, I guess.
Let's see the fighting.
Bring me on some manly fighting now with the woman.
Oh, one thing I thought was a bit janky was some of the CG when she's flying around in space. It was like a fat Brie Larson doll that they made, like some of the bits where she's like first flight. I was like, this looks rubbish.
Yeah, which is unusual for Marvel films as well, I would say. But overall, I really, really enjoyed it. I'm sticking with my, it's way better than Doctor Strange, which I'm surprised to see a lot of people liked. When I put that up on Twitter last night, I had like multiple replies going like, how come you don't like Doctor Strange? And I was like, because it is a bland movie. It is fine. Absolutely fine, but I've never felt the urge to rewatch it, and I've always felt the urge to rewatch other Marvel movies, even ones that I didn't particularly like Thor: The Dark World. I've watched a second time. I've watched Iron Man 2 multiple times.
Yeah. Doctor Strange is in my Netflix list, and I have never clicked on it.
Exactly, I've got it on Blu-ray. It's still in its cellophane wrapping because I've never opened it. But I don't think it's as good as Iron Man or Captain America: The First Avengers in terms of being an origin story. Mm. It's middle of the pack for me in terms of the wider MCU picture.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think Marvel Studios is a 3.5-star, 4-star movie making machine that occasionally malfunctions and makes the Dark World, but or more often than not, is very consistent in making. These are all very good to excellent movies.
Yes, and I think this did enough of a job of setting up what a Captain Marvel is. So I'm now like, okay, I feel primed on the idea of Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Hopefully, when now jumping through time 20 years down the line, she's a very rounded character. And we find, and she's Carol Danvers again now. And then we find out who she is here. And then whatever the end game of end game is in the tail end of that, is she one of the shining lights of the future Phase 4 Marvel? I hope so.
She's Captain America, perhaps.
Carol Danvers is a great character.
Great character. And a great leader for a new team.
And the modern set of comics of Captain Marvel are fantastic.
Yeah, really, really cool. So I would certainly recommend it. Even to new viewers to the MCU, if there are, though, if those still exist, like my dad. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a 3.5-star movie. Very much enjoyed. And that the mid-credit sequence where you kind of get to go into that endgame world of them looking at the pager.
Oh
man, I was getting like, my heart was palpitating.
Yes,
I was,
yes. Tell me more. Oh,
there's someone else. And then when Bree showed up at the end, I was like, I'm in.
Yes.
Anyway,
perfect time to do the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
1 week later. Yeah.
And after I've seen the film. It's like they were waiting for me. Any final thoughts on Captain Marvel?
It's brilliant. I think that's about it. I think it's well worth a watch. There's obviously it's obviously not going to be Endgame.
Yes.
But it's well worth looking at.
I agree. That is all we've got time for on this episode of the Wrestle Ramble podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back on Saturday with the magazine show with your crap gimmicks and mailbag questions. We'll see you then. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.